the future belongs to those who can merge the two, where the art is merged with the analytics. We cannot move forward into the future with the same brain that we got into the 21st century with. The 21st century requires a different kind of brain and a different kind of being. And so flexibility, creativity, innovation, imagination, these are the things that are going to need in order for us to actually succeed. Leadership, inspiration, empathy, these things cannot be replaced by a computer. So they become the most valuable thing.
Welcome to the Create and Grow podcast. This is Janine Ledford, your host and the creator of the groundbreaking concept of intercultural creativity, which is the intersection of creative thinking and cultural competence. So if you're looking for new, exciting ways to build a positive culture of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging that sparks creativity, this is your place. We have exciting guests in all types of fields who highlight how creative thinking best thrives in a culture of diverse collaboration. At the Create and Grow podcast, you'll discover how inclusion drives innovation. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Create and Grow Rich podcast. As always, I'm excited to be here with you to bring you wisdom, to bring you different perspectives, and of course, to bring you exciting topics about intercultural creativity. Today, I have with me an amazing, amazing guest right now, halfway across the world. And her name is Dr. Saliha Afridi. She's a powerful thought leader in the area of mental health, wellness, parenting, and dealing with that inner critic, which affects our creativity. You know, that voice that influences the way you see your creative self. Her clinical training has been as a generalist, working with children, adolescents, and adults on a range of mental health topics. Her expertise is in parenting as well as burnout within the workplace sector. After gaining her degrees from Phoenix, Arizona, Dr. Afridi moved to the UAE from the United States 11 years ago to make a positive impact on mental health in her region. She established the Lighthouse Arabia, which is now one of the largest mental health centers in the UAE. Her mission was to make mental health services accessible to the UAE community, which she is doing very, very well, her and her team. And since its founding, Dr. Afridi and her team have contributed thousands of hours to the community free of charge to educate and raise awareness on best practices for mental health and wellness. Her most recent achievement was bringing the internationally acclaimed Australian Mental Health First Aid to the UAE, where her team has trained over 1,000 mental health first aiders for early detection and treatment of mental health difficulties within their communities. We're here to talk about intercultural creativity, mental health, wellness, and how it affects your creative identity from childhood all the way to adulthood. Welcome to the show, Dr. Afridi.
Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure.
I am so excited to talk to you about this. My background is in psychology, and even though it's a BA, you know, that general beginnings of it, I always tell people that psychology to me is the most useful degree ever. And the reason why I say it's useless, because it was hard to find a job with just a psychology bachelor's, right? I needed another certification or whatever. I was like, it lends itself to more education. But I say psychology is the most useful area of study, because if you understand how the mind works and what causes us to do what we do and think what we think, then you can basically, you know, just write your own ticket. And so for you, if you could give us just a little bit more background about how you came to be, why Dubai? You know, you were in the United States, in Phoenix, Arizona, and you went all across the world. So what was the impetus of that change, and a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah. So, thank you for that question. So I actually did a couple classes in my undergraduate program when I was at University of Michigan. And I took psychology 101 or something, and I hated it. So kudos to you for finishing a bachelor's in psychology, because I actually think it's torturous to study it for a bachelor's degree. I decided I washed my hands of it, although I've been very curious as a human being my whole life. Psychology undergrad did not appeal to me at all. So I ended up doing my undergraduate degree in cultural anthropology. So you really want to find a degree that you can't do much with. That would be the one. And so I did it in, I studied the Chinese language at University of Michigan, and I did my undergraduate degree in communications as well as cultural anthropology. So I did a double major, and I decided I was going to go into international business. I got a marketing job right out of college. Because again, this idea of creation was something that was very important. The creativity and curiosity have just been my driving forces. But I was, and I was really good at it. I was good at the marketing and sort of getting under, you know, how do you sell something to someone, because you have to understand them in order to sell something to them. And so marketing actually was really quite a good of a job to sort of take my skills to. But a year and a half into that, I remember sitting in like my office and thinking, it almost like the sky opened up, lightning bolt came down and like hit me on the head and said, you're going to do this for the rest of your life. You are going to sell things to people they don't need for the rest of your life. And it was almost like my whole life flashed in front of my eyes. And I was like, I cannot live like this. And so I decided I was going to go off and be a dentist. And so I was like, what do I like? I like smiles. I like people. And, you know, so I'm going to go be a dentist. And I started taking my prelim courses for dental school. And I decided, nope, that's not for me either. And then I remember my sister asking me a question saying, what do you love? And I said, I love stories. And I've always just loved stories. And she said, and I like people. I like caring for people. I want to be in a caring profession where my heart is engaged. She said, you need to be a psychologist. I said, all right, let's try it. And, you know, I have a really bad memory. So I forgot that I hated it in undergrad. And so I was like, okay, let me try it. And so I've always given myself permission that the day I stop liking something is the day I'll stop it. If my heart's not in it, it's not in it. And so I joined the master's program and then went on to do my doctorate. And this is now, you know, 16 years later, and I'm still in it. So that was, you know, but I took a really long, round, loopy way of getting to it. And then I moved to the UAE because, I don't know, I always just felt restless when I was in the US. I love the US and I love my home. We have a home in Chicago. That's where I grew up. But there was a restlessness inside of me as if my spirit sought something different. It was seeking something different. And when we first moved, when I was actually, you know, we were living in the UAE when I was born. My mom just flew to Pakistan to give birth to me, and then we moved back here. So some part of my spirit is of this land. I'm not Arab. I don't belong to the Middle East. And so I came here. My brother was here at the time, and I felt a settling in my soul that said, this is it, you're supposed to be here. And I didn't know it at that time, but I realized later that my calling was here, my work is here. And so I am here now. It's actually been 13 years now, 13 years later, and the lighthouse has been around for 10.
There's so much there. As you're speaking, I can see so many avenues that I can, you know, go down. But I want to really highlight the fact that as you're speaking, I'm aware that you're very aware. You're very in tune with your intuition, with external and internal intuition. And I know, you know, through my conversations, through my practice, some, you know, coaching and training, that a lot of people struggle with that awareness. What's some advice that you can give for people to increase that awareness so they can kind of see when it's time to pivot or when they're no longer in a place that serves them?
Yeah, this is such a great question. You know, I would say that I was always very emotional and very sensitive. So I think if you're an empath, you can be sure that you have the ability to tune in to some clair of yours, whether you can hear things, whether you can feel things, whether you can sense things, you will be if you are an empath. So that's just one thing I want to say. I just happen to have a very loud spirit. Most of us have a spirit, and it's, well, not most, every one of us has a spirit, and it nudges us and it tells us, and, you know, we can drown it out through our Netflix and through our social media and through our work, and the spirit just gets kind of, but mine is a bit, you know, aggressive, I would say. And if I'm not using my heart in something, it's just not gonna let me be happy. And for me, I think happiness, like that true, for me, happiness is like an engagement, an inspiration. You know, if I'm feeling deadened by my work, if there is no life breathing into me through that work, it is no longer for me. And it's just gonna make sure that I leave. And until I leave, it will agitate me, will make me irritated. So these feelings that we have, all of us have them, I just listen and I say, okay, what are you telling me? Why are you asking? What are you asking of me? And usually I will listen, and maybe I took a wrong turn somewhere, but every wrong turn that I made with the right heart led me to the right place. So I don't hold my decisions with the level of this is my life depending on it. It's just like, well, this is where it says it's going to go, so I'm going to go with that. So maybe there's almost a fool in me that doesn't take herself very seriously, which has led me to listen to that intuition, because I'm like, wait a minute, I'm onto something here. So that's another thing I would say, is pay attention and listen to your emotions. Don't take your decisions, is the third thing I would say. Don't take your decisions so seriously. If you don't like it, leave. And I know there's a life that depends on it. I've been a single mother of three children. I get that this is not easy sometimes. But there is a way to keep the day job and still find life somewhere inside of you, and eventually transition over. I had to work in a place that was extremely toxic before I started the Lighthouse for me, but I had to pay the bills. I had to feed my kids. I had to do some of these things. So, but I did that, but something else was cooking inside of me, and I let it cook. I wasn't just like, well, this is my destiny and I will feed my kids here and that's it. So that's the third thing I would say, is don't take your decision so seriously. And the fourth thing I would say is, still yourself, quieten yourself. The world is so loud, and we are so distracted, and we are so hyper, just activated, and the spirit needs silence, and the spirit needs stillness, and the spirit needs solitude. If we look at all the great people that came before us, whether it was the prophets or the philosophers or the inventors, they worked alone. And that's where the spirit came and spoke to them. You know, Moses went up in the mountain, and Buddha went in under the linden tree, and Jesus went into the desert. Like, all of these place people went somewhere away from, they could have heard the spirit anywhere, but no, they had to get away from some of that to listen and engage with that part of themselves. So there needs to be a practice and a discipline of stillness, solitude, silence, in order for you to engage with that part of you. You're not going to hear it in the hustle and bustle of the day-to-day life. Eventually, you will get to an age and a place where you will sense things. But even now, I'm just thinking about what I'm supposed to do next week, and I'm supposed to prepare for a TEDx talk, and I need to get away from my kids, my husband, everybody at this time, because I need to connect with my spirit, because it's too hectic if I, you know, my life is hectic. So those are the four things that just come right shooting out of me, but let's see what else comes up.
I love it. And congratulations so much for the TEDx talk. I'm so excited for when that comes out and for me to share it with our audience. So once again, you give me so many jump off points. And I want to really highlight the importance of the emotional intelligence that you first touched on, one of your first points. When I heard you speak on Clubhouse, that's how I first got in contact with you. Just amazing, amazing thought leader on there. You were talking just about the emotional importance, and then you really relegated it to men and to certain demographics that may not have the freedom and the green light to really develop that. Now, I'm the mother of a 3-year-old son. So if you remember when your children were 3, and this is, we're talking about children, but also how the formative years impact the adult years. I definitely want to get your expertise on that. But I remember you just saying, I'm a emotional, an empath. And I remember just not liking that part of myself because I wore my heart on my sleeve, and now I see it as a benefit, and I see it as a toolkit for me to navigate. And now, the word empathy is big now in the business world, but 20 years ago, not so, right? But you talked about men and how we kind of shut down this tool, right? This muscle of really getting into contact with your emotions, understanding how to use them properly and what that looks like. Could you speak to that as far as the formative years, as far as boys, and as far as men, and what the result is and what the effect is of not training the muscle of the emotional realm?
Yeah. Women have their own difficulties in this space. They're called too emotional and too sensitive and too, oh, she's just being a woman. And, so women have their own weight in that space and their own struggles. But men have a very particular difficulty in this space. Most of my work is with men currently. I deal a lot with executive men, and my work is mostly with them. And I've just seen in the last, I would say probably 7 years is where most of that is happening, is the detrimental effects of just not having an upbringing that actually, created space for that part of them. This was just toughen up, man up, don't be a girl. This is what they grow up hearing. And so they become quite dissociated with this heart brain of theirs and their instinct. Actually, because the heart actually, the body holds the instinct. And more, especially in the last 10, 15 years, when we've become quite technologically advanced, men and women, but especially men, because they have first the cultural upbringing of just boys don't cry and boys don't feel. But now also in the space where they are becoming even more dissociated because they live in a virtual reality, quite disconnected to their body, and quite into their head and in this virtual space. So, of course, illnesses are going to show up in the body. Of course, suicide. It's one of the leading causes of, of death in men. And that is because they cannot tolerate feeling anything. There's no space for them. There's no way for them to go somewhere and actually say, I feel sad. Because that would just be, that would just be the end of them. Because where is there that space? I think there is a turn coming. They're realizing that this is just not going to work. But it is something that mothers, fathers, corporate spaces have to make space for this kind of psychological safety for an integrated being to exist. Like human beings, there's nothing in us that is arbitrary, whether it's our eyelashes, whether it's our veins, whether it's our, our nails or our teeth or the hair in our nose, nothing there is without reason. Then why such a huge part of our existence, which is our emotions, why do we try to eliminate or control? It doesn't make sense. If you think about it intuitively, it actually makes zero sense. And men are the ones who suffer the most because there's no space in any culture for them to feel, openly. And talk about their feelings openly.
And so for us doing better work, and like I said before, I came from the elementary classroom. I taught for 15 years for K-12, and then I ran a nonprofit for 6-12. And I also taught at the local university in California, Cal State Northridge. So I saw the whole pipeline in literally 1 week, from 4 years old all the way to 64 years old. And so I got to see an interesting perspective And yes, looking at what are we doing with our children during the formative years and how that plays out when they are adults, I definitely want to, so that's the first connection there of looking at the emotional development of our children. But I want to really get your thoughts on just the whole formation years. I feel like I'm speaking into a bullhorn to people, especially in corporate, like, you know, the childhood years are so important. You know, we get the less funding, but I think the critical years are there. What can you tell us as far as the formative years and what we should be doing at that time to make sure we have a great pipeline into adulthood, into the workforce?
Yeah. So the formative years, you know, let's just say there may be, you know, there's windows of opportunity and windows of sensitivity, and 0 to 3 usually is considered a window of sensitivity, or 0 to 5. And then we have another window that shows up from like 9 to 16, where the brain goes on massive, you know, development. Now, these are time, I mean, obviously the whole childhood is important because your personality is forming. It's not just about your brain. So I would say from 0 to 17, you really have a lot of, you know, a lot of influence on a child's way of being in the world. And I think we do have to be very present as parents. And I think what is happening here is that we can talk all day long about the formative years of the child, but if the parent is not well, the child will not be well, because we cannot give to the child anything we have not gotten or given to ourselves. And so the first thing when you think about having a child is, where do I need to do my work? And where do I need to heal? Because we pass on our wounds to our children as much as we pass on other things, you know, and our emotional wounds, our attachment wounds, our relational wounds, all of that plays out with children. So these developmental years are going to be critical, and parents need to maybe just know that. I think technology is going to be a huge, huge, I don't know what the word is. I mean, these are like weapons of mass, you know, destruction, distraction, all of it, really, because the brain is so sensitive, and there are things a child will need in order for them to succeed in life. If we give them the phone, or if we give them the iNanny, or if we give them the television, and we just don't have them learn how to tolerate their frustration because we just don't want to deal with it, because as parents we're overwhelmed, then you can be sure that that kid is going to be numbing himself with something. If it's not the iPad, it's going to be the bottle, or it's going to be something else that he's going to be using. So we do need to teach emotional skills, including frustration tolerance, boredom tolerance. That's a huge one in the world of dopamine that we live in, where every app is giving us some sort of hit of dopamine. Kids don't know how to be bored. If my kid comes and tells me, "Mama, what do? We're bored." I'm like, yes. Please be bored. Like, I feel like I should get a medal that day. I go to sleep so happy. I bored my kids today. You know, these hyper scheduled, hyper engaged kids, they don't have space. And we're talking about creativity here. Creativity, anything to be created needs space. The womb is a space in which a child is formed. So you need to create a space in order for the child to grow and learn. And if every moment of their day is so scheduled and so planned, and you're going to get them into that college, and, you know, by the time they get to that college, they might not graduate out of that college. They might get in, but what type of person do you want them to be? That's what we need to be thinking about.
And that is so good. Thank you so much for sharing that, because I think you and I see elements that the business world may deem as unimportant or as a play. I definitely want you to talk about play or frivolous, you know, and I do a lot of training on like imagination. But when you hear words like imagination, play, yeah, being bored, you know, just these words that are normally relegated to the childhood scene, and why they're so important for the entire life, correct? Boredom is important for the entire life. It's almost like I'm fighting an uphill battle, you know, to get these concepts to be taken seriously. What can you say to the business world, to your CEOs, of why things like play and boredom and just imagination, and, you know, just that time to think, you know, turning on your innovative network in the brain. What would you say to your C-suite, since you do work with a lot of directors, about bringing this type of training or practice into their culture?
So play is probably as important as our basic needs. Without play, we become rigid. Without spontaneity, we cannot be creative. Without spontaneity, we cannot be innovative. Without flexibility, our brain cannot remain agile. We need play. The brain needs play, not just human beings because it's fun, but also because our brain, in order to remain agile and flexible and adaptive to the ever-changing world, to, you know, this uncertain place that we live in, the people who are more playful endured COVID differently than the people who are not playful, who expect things a certain way at a certain time, in a certain way, with a certain person. That person cracked under COVID. And so we want that. But also for the CEOs, the future, everything can be replaced, perhaps with except imagination and creativity. You know, we need, the ideas cannot be generated. Everything else can be done. I can create an idea and maybe the computer can paint it, but the idea generation has to come from the human. And that kind of idea generation requires a brain that is outside of your normal realm of just existence, of what is in front of me, and this analytical mind and the strategic mind. We need a different kind of way of being. We cannot move forward into the future with the same brain that we got into the 21st century with. The 21st century requires a different kind of brain and a different kind of being. And so flexibility, creativity, innovation, imagination, these are the things that are going to need in order for us to actually succeed. Leadership, inspiration, empathy. These things cannot be replaced by a computer. So they become the most valuable thing.
And so with that, what are some hands-on things that parents can do, caregivers can do, and even leaders can do to take some of these concepts and actually manifest them into everyday actions?
I would say that first, just do your own work. I can't say that enough. You know, I did my dissertation in parenting because I was expecting my first child. And I was so like one of those like neurotic parents that I was going to get it really right. So I read and read and read and read and read. And then I read so much. And then I was like, I might as well just do a dissertation because I just know so much at this point. So that's what inspired me is my first pregnancy is to get this dissertation in parenting. And then, you know, I had one kid and then another and then another, and then I had four kids. And then I realized that, you know, maybe the things that are in the books are not necessarily going to be the things that are going to be playing out with your child. But the most important thing that I learned from my parenting journey was that if I don't do my own work, parenting is about the parent, not the ing. Forget the ing and the parent needs to focus on that. When you do your work, when you're attuned, you know, yesterday I'm sitting with my son and I'm talking to him about his day. And I look over and my daughter just looks, you know, she's over her computer doing something. And I'm looking at her and I said, what is it, Liana? What's going on? No, nothing. And I can sense just through my physical sense, she's far from me, not too far, but far from me. I can sense that her body stiffens. As an attuned mother, because I have done my work to heal my body, the healed body is a bigger receptor to the environment and the sensory experience of the environment. So I look at her and I say, okay, tune in and what's going on? And I can tell that she's stressed about something that's about to happen tomorrow. Okay, you're worried about something that's happening tomorrow. So I reflect back to her. You're worried about something. Yeah. And then she opens up. All I'm doing is reflecting and being a mirror to her. As a mirror. And then we worked through it. And within 7 minutes, that issue was resolved. And that was it. And I timed it. I was like, let's see how long this takes. But the more attuned you get to your own stuff, the more competent and capable you feel when that child is having a nervous moment, that you don't become unraveled as a result. So whether you are a leader, I've had difficult conversations, brave conversations with my team members who are also very sensitive. So how do I contain that person while I inspire that person, while I speak honestly with that person about this work was not what we were expecting? And how is it that we can help you and support you so you do it in the way that is up to your standards and ours? So having those conversations requires some level of self-awareness and self-management. So that is the single most important thing a leader and a parent can do. Don't even try to come up with well-being programs and this program and that program until you've done your own work, which is the hardest thing to do. So that's practically speaking, what do I do? I have probably dedicated 10, 15 hours a week on which I do my work, whether it's energy healings, whether it's yoga, whether it's cryo chambers, whether it's 2 hours of analysis that I do with my therapist. This is my commitment to myself and to the people that are in my world that I am leading through parenting or through my team. So it is not just a theoretical, oh, I need to do my work. Where is it in your schedule? Put it in your schedule, because it ain't gonna happen. And this is not just about journaling, because that's great. Be self-reflective, but you need a mirror. No one can do this without a mirror, okay? The work is just slower. And so if you don't have a therapist, you don't have a counselor, you don't have a coach you're working with, mm-hmm. you can expect that the progress is not gonna be that strong. I think the second thing is that we need to create a language within our worlds, whether it's at work or whether it's at home. We need to think about the microaggressions or the microways we actually shut people down. That, come on, man, like, just get over it. Like, we sometimes say things with all good intention that, oh, well, you know, mom, I did really bad in this exam. Oh, you know, it's okay, honey, but maybe there will be next time, right? Or, you know, did you try hard? Maybe it's your fault. Like, these conversations shut people up. There's no psychological safety in that. But if I say, tell me what happened, tell me what's going on, where, you know, what, how do you feel about it? And what are you going to do differently next time? That's where learning happens. So that would be that you need to have a language and a space. So the space is, you literally cannot book yourself like 80 hours a week. You cannot not have self-care, because you need to be a container and a space holder for many people. And so I see a lot of leaders that's where their downfall is that they don't have time. I have so many good intentions to mentor people and to parent my kids, but I just don't. And when I do have time, I'm like done and exhausted. So self-care would be an important part, but also just knowing that it needs to show up in that schedule. So for me, my time management is my life management. If you ask me, tomorrow, what am I doing on March 17th? Or you ask me right now what I'm doing, I can tell you what's my day going to look like. And there will be a podcast that I will do, and there will be an Instagram that I will do, and there will be two meetings that I will have, because my days have a rhythm. And each Monday will have a rhythm, and each Tuesday will have a rhythm. So these are some of the things that are so practical, but these are the things that we actually forget very easily. And I would also say something that is super practical, and of course, I cannot have any conversation in my day without adding this, that without sleep, exercise, eating right, and meditating, where things seem right, you need to seem yourself, actually, in the sense that you need to sleep 7 to 8 hours. Yes, it's possible. You need to eat right, because the gut has a brain, and you need all three if you're going to be creative and a whole leader and a whole person that shows up. Your heart needs to be right. Your head needs to be right. And these things are not separate. So we are one whole being, and we need to tend to the whole being. So you need to eat right. If you're eating junk and you're expecting yourself to show up in your full power, ain't going to happen. Okay. And then you need to move. exercise is one of the most important things that we can do for our creativity. Our brain lights up like a Christmas tree with a 20-minute walk at 60, 70% of our maximum heart rate. So these are just some, like, guys, you know, those guys who started the fire, you know, with two sticks eons of years ago, thousands and thousands of years ago, those Neanderthal cousins of ours, live like them, be like them, because they were very creative. But we don't live like that. We think we're sitting in front of our computer and all this, you know, magic is going to come downloading onto us. It doesn't happen like that. We have to do the whole body. We have to do the whole mind.
And that reminds me of the work of Dr. Daniel Siegel out of UCLA. I don't know if you're aware of him, but yeah, he talks about the integrated brain. And he's he works with children as well. So I know that is definitely in your field. But I'm like, oh my goodness. And what I wonder is, you know, as technology advances and it's all about comfort, you know, here's do more with less, comfort, comfort, comfort. It's actually taking away our opportunity to say, here are these basic items. You know, basically I call it the MacGyver mind, you know, like what can I make with these basic items, or how can I reach this task? But now everything is done for us. And I don't know if you ever watched the movie with the robot, We, where everything was done for the human. So they just sat back for their entire life and did absolutely nothing. And, you know, and gained all this weight and everything. And so, yeah, just getting into a place. But I am going to challenge you with a question with your day in the rhythm. I love you use that word rhythm. I have a background in music and the arts. And that's another thing, you know, if you could touch on that. And why do you think, if you do, that the arts are a critical part of the development of a human being? But just so you have your rhythm of your days, but how do you allow spontaneity in that, if you kind of have a rhythm, you know, how do you have that balance of the rhythm yet? It's just happened. Let's just go with it.
Yeah. I schedule my spontaneity. I think, you know, it's just when you are at a certain point in your career and in your life, there is space for just spontaneity. But once you have families and, you know, children and their schedules and their play dates and, you know, your work and your, you know, management that you have to do, your business development you have to do, if you don't schedule in space for things to surface, then nothing will surface. So of course, there are times, and that's why I say the higher up you go and the more responsibility you have, you leave a lot more room in your schedule for things to show up. So my schedule will be probably 50% booked, and the other 50% is just anything can happen. And I work in mental health. Like, this is, you know, any crisis can show up and I have to manage it. Any talk can come up, any crisis, debriefing needs to happen. Like, these types of things, we leave room for some of that stuff. But for creativity, I think we need more than just a moment of inspiration. We need space. I don't know. I mean, there's times where I'm like, oh yeah, let's go see this, you know, theater thing that's happening. Of course, there will be space for that. But generally speaking, it needs to be some space you create. So whether it's every Sunday, you know, 5 hours where you do nothing, or every Friday where you go for a walk in nature and meet the spirit there. I do in people who say, well, I don't want every hour of my day scheduled. I said, okay, well, then you're not going to do everything you want to do. It's okay to not have every hour of your day scheduled, but then don't be disappointed when you get to the end of the year and you say, well, I didn't get anything done because you didn't put it in the books. And so for me, I schedule in my inspiration time. It may not be as spontaneous, but there is space for it.
And that's so important, because it, you know, you give time to what you think is important, that priority level. And so as we move into this next decade, this next era of really, what does it mean to be alive? What does it mean to be human? And reprioritizing those other words that you just shared before, the empathy, the play, imagination, the connectedness, you know, are we going to move those up on our schedule? And so we do here at the Create and Grow, Grow Rich podcast, we do make a distinction between artistic creativity and creativity as a whole. We say, you know, creativity isn't just artistry, because a lot of people think they're not creative because they're not excellent in the arts, because we haven't clearly defined that word. And so we do have a clear definition of that. But at the same time, we do say that artistry and having a background in the arts or exposure to the arts or time and space for the arts does increase your creative thinking in other non-arts areas. And so there's a raft of research of, you know, your inventors, your scientists, like George Washington Carver, people who did great things in other areas, had a significant training in, you know, painting and music and things along those lines. What do you have to say to that as far as arts training that begins in childhood, but also adults who just want to pick up the paintbrush?
Yeah, there is something we access that is lost when we try to use words. There is some part of our spirit that can only be accessed through symbols and through art and through music and through sound and through, you know, touch and other, you know, drama. Like we cannot give it a word. We cannot organize it. We just have to live it and, you know, move, let it move through us. So for sure, I mean, the parts of your brain that you are activating, because they're all neural pathways, and we live in a world which is very left brain, you know, analytical thinking, strategic thinking, you know, development, business, et cetera, et cetera. We think we live in that world. Now, the future belongs to those who can merge the two, right? Where the art is merged with the analytics, and that's where magic will happen. But I think if we get too stuck in the space of analytics and logical thinking, we will lose what makes us human and what brings us to life. So that, I think it needs to be a practice. And it isn't, you know, I remember when I took this art, I was studying in the Jungian Institute, and it was like, oh, with much hesitation, I went in, and this was many years ago, and it was about creativity, and I was just hoping to like create, not creativity in the art sense, and he brought out markers and paints, and I was like, oh my God, don't make me draw, man, and he said, I want you to doodle, and I was like, oh, I can doodle, because it wasn't draw, and that one word shift just surrendered the expectation that I had of myself. When I say draw, I felt like it needed to be something. But when he said doodle, I let my mind wander and beautiful things came out. So I think we do just need to create some space for that. And there's something that cannot be touched by words and by logic. It can only be touched by art. And the arts. So we just have to do it, even if it feels messy.
I love that. I need to squeeze in these last few questions before I let you go. Thank you so much. And when I heard you on Clubhouse, you were talking about the observer self. Could you explain a little bit about that and just the imagination work of that activity you took us through? If you could talk about that and then why getting in touch with your observer self is important.
Yeah. I think we're very fused with our thoughts. And so if I ask you, and I had my 6-year-old daughter do this just 2 days ago. So if I ask you, I want you to close your eyes and I want you to imagine a red ball rolling down the stairs. And then I want you to imagine a full moon setting, you know, shining on the sea. And now I want you to imagine a car zooming by on the road, right? I just had you imagine and visual, you saw it in your mind's eye, these images that came through. So you are not the image. You are not the thought. You are not the words that might have shown up in front of your eyes. You are the observer of that. And that is the spirit that has been with you since the time you entered this body, and it will leave you when you leave this body. That observer is the spirit. It is the wise part of us. It is the part of us that is not reactive. It is the part of us that is creative. It is the part of us that is eternal, actually. But we need to stay connected to that part of us and tap into that part of us, which is what you can do through your meditation, whether it's mindfulness meditation, whether it's just nature walking, and you stay connected to the nature. But don't let the thoughts become you. You are not your thoughts. And there is a lot of power in the observer self being a healthy, cultivated part of you, because then when you're doodling along and you're thinking, okay, I'm just going to have fun and I'm going to pick up this color and that color, and then the inner critic shows up and it says, what are you doing? And you say, no, not today. I'm not going to engage with you today. And you know what? I don't even want to transmute you, or I don't want to engage. I just don't want to talk to you right now. So please take a seat and I will call upon you when I need your feedback. And then you go back to doodling. If that healthy part of, if that part of you is loud and proud and strong, you are more in control of all the other voices that will show up. That's the chairman of the board. Everybody will exist on the board. There will be a bully, there will be a critic, there will be a friend, there will be a sage, there will be a magician. Which one will you give voice to? The chairman gets to decide. So chairman is the observer. Strengthen the observer, which can only happen through meditation.
Thank you so much for that. That is so well put. And the last question that I have before I want you to share about your company, where people can find you, is a term that I don't know if I created, but I started using it, creative abuse or creative trauma, basically trauma or abuse that people may have had, even something as like a teacher that said, you know, your ideas or whatever, or just a negative comment, like we talk about those microaggressions, that I'm finding people are holding on to something as quote unquote light as that, all the way to, you know, serious types of abuse, of course, into their adulthood. And I call that creative abuse, and also creative abuse in my positioning can also be a side effect or another component to other types of abuse, like domestic abuse, child abuse, that it affects their creative identity in adulthood. It affects the way that they see themselves and that they don't think that they can contribute at the level that they would have had they not had that creative abuse. What are your thoughts about that?
I would say to that is just remember who you are. You're a, you know, and I think, and this is probably where I would end with this comment, is you are far more than what words people have said to you and the things that have happened to you. There is something, like I said, eternal that exists in you. There's a spirit and a soul that is far stronger and bigger than anything that has ever happened to you, has been said to you. Do you come to life when you draw? Do you come to life when you create? Do you feel, you know, the life force pumping through your veins when you actually engage in that type of work? If that's the truth, then fight for it. You know, Disney was told that he was no good. Elvis was told that he was no good. Everybody, there were so many great people that were told that you are no good. People told me that my business will never work. This thing is never going to work. Mental health is never going to make money. Mental health is, you're going to shut it down. You are doing too much work for free. Okay. Is your why strong enough? And remember who you are. If you know that this is your calling and this is what brings you to life, then do it. You might not succeed, but you will be alive while you're alive, you know, and there will be something else that comes your way. And so the path of purpose and the path of inspiration doesn't necessarily neatly present itself. It will nudge you in this direction and nudge you in that direction. And someone will tell you no, and someone will tell you yes. but you are far bigger and stronger than anything. And just know that it will be, maybe you will fail at this thing, but that's not a failure. It was just like a redirection, and then another redirection, and another redirection, till you land where you are supposed to be. I took all kinds of turns and lefts and rights and ups and downs until I landed in my spot. But that's what resiliency and grit is about, is that I want my spot and I will keep looking for it until I find it. And no matter what people tell me, it's okay, because I know myself and I know my sense. I trust my sense. Trust your sense. If that's what you're meant to be doing, then keep doing it until you land in your spot.
Awesome. And I think that could be your gem as well. You know, I always end my podcast with what final gem, and that was a beautiful, beautiful gem. And so if you could quickly tell people where they could find you, a little bit about the Lighthouse, that'd be amazing.
Yeah. So we have our website, which is lighthousearabia.com. But most interaction with me is on LinkedIn or Instagram at Dr. Saliha Afridi. I also have some longer lectures on YouTube, which we're just slowly starting to build that space. But all of that is available to people.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And do you have a book out, or should I say yet?
Yet. We will say
I feel one. I feel one coming. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. I know you're going to rock the TED Talk, because we definitely need more voices such as yours, just advocating for those who are voiceless currently right now, and who are growing and developing their voice as we speak. So thank you so much for the work that we do. I mean, I told you I only bring you the best, and she is the best. Please go to her work, support her, learn from her and her amazing team. You do have an amazing team. I was going back and forth with them. I was like, you guys are on point. And thank you again for your time. I really do appreciate it. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us at the Create and Grow podcast. We hope that you obtained some amazing gems and are able to see how you are creative and how we are more creative when we work well together. If you wish to learn more about our organizational training programs and professional development for companies, organizations, schools, and districts, visit cafestrategies.com. That's C-A-F-F-E strategies.com, where we have amazing keynote speakers and certified facilitators on board to help your organization learn how to build a climate of inclusion and innovation. We have groundbreaking book titles in our online bookstore that lay out the 7 gems of intercultural creativity, as well as our children's books that inspire the innate creative ability of our little ones. We thank you again for joining us and remind you to shine bright like a diamond. See you next time.